that working? Okay.
Thank you. My name is Deborah and I'm an alcoholic. It's very good to be here tonight. I think this is the third time over the years I've been invited to come up here and share with you guys. Several familiar faces and lots of new ones. I was talking to Dale, who communicated with me to invite me up here. And he sort of gave me a format. And what was read here tonight was on page 29 of the big book, which is the last paragraph in the chapter, There is a Solution. I know that, not because I memorized it, but because it was in some of the suggestions of how to keep the format in this speaker meeting. And so I opened the big book, right? Yeah. And I read the chapter again, and it starts on page 17. And so that means there's 12 pages in that chapter. And I read it, and I hadn't read it in a while. But over the years, I had marked up that chapter quite a bit, and I had been through many studies over many years in there, and there had been lots of things written in there and lots of things marked in there. And one thing that I noticed that I had done was instead of he, I had put she and the things like that. So I had referenced it to me personally and put my name in the pages, you know, it became very personal. And I think that was one of the things that was apparent early on in learning how to make this program mine. And so over the time spent in this recovery, it had to become not something out there for others, but just a very intimate walk that I had to own. And so I became dry. My first dry day was April 27th, 1985. So my next anniversary will give me 40 years in this program of recovery, which is pretty cool. Since I was almost dead the night before and had run some real scams in my last drunken experience. And so that ended up putting me in a hospital, and a variety of escapades had come to pass before that. Like most of us, if we accumulate a bottom that we hope never to go back to, those are part of our gift of desperation. And over the years, I've shared those junkalogs, which I'll spare you tonight. I'll share them anytime with you, usually not up at the podium too much because you all have one or 20. And I've never found it necessary since I had that first dry day to go back out and try it again, which is truly a blessing. On that one day, I was also with family members, a cousin and a sister. And as of this day, the cousin has 36 years clean through NA. I told her she's in the wrong program, but she still manages to not take a drink or a drug over it, anything through NA. And she's been with me many times through AA meetings here and when she comes to visit. And also I have a sister that in that first dry day that is here in Virginia that is celebrating in December 14 years sober. It took her a couple of tries, but she's alive and sober today. So that's really neat. That was a tougher one to manage because she had a tougher journey, I guess. So for whatever that's worth, I'll take what I have today with it, and we're very, very close as we were back in those days. So today, as I live sober, I came to Virginia in 2000 and let's see, 2000 and let's see, 1998 is when I moved to Virginia, and I had about 14 years sober. So I thought I was all grown up, and I was sober enough to leave California, is where I came from, on purpose. And then I knew what I was doing because I was sober and I was moving on purpose. I had lived there all my life. And so we came here. My husband came here. And so I thought I'd come with him. And he had been here before, back in the early 70s, and he had acquired some property. And so we came here to live. And as we came here to live, his family business sold, and his parents had passed away fairly recently, and there was nothing holding him there. So I came here and we started a new life here. And we put together three farms, and they were all run down. And so we started rebuilding and trying to farm the farms. And they basically farmed us. So, if you know what I mean. They were all run down, and for many, many years, people had brought their piles of mattresses, box springs, roofing, anything you had, it was there. And so he began over the years to slowly try to rehab all these pastures and fences and things like that. And we began a cattle operation, a cow-calf operation. And I brought two horses from California, and we were going to live happily ever after. And we've managed to do the happily ever after part. And I didn't know what snow was, and I certainly didn't know what ice was. So I had met a home group, which was the Thursday night, a Little Washington group that meets on Thursdays at 8:30. Now that's a late night meeting, and it went on indefinitely. That night they would break at 9:30, and everybody would go out and smoke, and they would come back, and the meetings would sometimes go on to like 11, and so on. And so on January 10th, I slipped in the ice and I broke my arm in five places. So welcome to Virginia, you dumb California girl. And that's what I did. And I would go to the meetings and I would be really grumpy. And they said, "You need to get into service." So they put me in charge of opening that meeting. And because I was cured of all my character defects, you'll see, it'll happen for you too. I told them that the meeting would be ending at 9:30. And so they nodded and smiled and they said, okay. And they went out at 9:30 and had their smoke break. And I closed the meeting and they went back in and continued the meeting. And that went on just the way it always did. So I would close the meeting every week at 9:30 and they would go out and come back in and I would leave and they would continue the meeting. So that went on for a long time, but nonetheless, the meeting now closes at 9:30. I don't know when it stopped meeting continually after 9:30, but somehow, somewhere, they did end up closing the meeting at 9:30. But it's always been a big, big joke. But you learn things when you're in recovery. You learn that you're not that important, and that you don't have to change things, and they're not going to let you. And but nonetheless, that's how I started my service work in Virginia. And sponsorship was a big deal. I've had three sponsors in my life. I had a sponsor when I got sober in California. I was also a little bit indebted to the court system in California. I had 5 years of probation, and I had a lot of community service that I owed, and some little bit of debt and fines and things of that nature from the car accident that created all my trouble. It was just really rude of them, but nonetheless, I had to pay those things back. And at some point, I went to work for a place on Skid Row. It was a community center that a sober highway patrolman had opened up for the AA people to come in and play cards. It also had a little kitchen in there, and people would come in there and order a little food, play at the tables, and sometimes the drunks would come in and he would feed them and things like that. That was his service work. And so I had done my community service, and so I just kept hanging out. I was sort of unemployable still. And he would pay me a few dollars here and there for gas money. And those were the early days, the first 9 months of sobriety or dry time that I had accumulated. And they would tell me how to cook their eggs. I really didn't care how to cook their eggs, but I was learning things in sobriety that I had never really tried to learn before, which was how you wanted your eggs mattered instead of just eat whatever I give you. The attitude started to change a little bit. I was becoming more willing. That first week that I was in the hospital after my first dry day, the hospital had asked me, "Would you care to share your room with a smoker?" Those days you could be in a hospital and smoke. That person that was in the hospital, I never did smoke. That person was one of the victims of my car accident, who happened to be my cousin. She never did smoke that week, but I began to become a little more caring about others. And so I said, yes, I don't mind if she smokes. Sadly, she never could smoke. So little by little, some of those attitudes, even though I was only dry, I had never been introduced to the program, they somehow subtly began to interweave themselves into my consciousness without a drink. So those things started happening, even though only being dry. I was 2 months later introduced into a treatment center, then into the recovery place to do my service, community service work, and met more sober people. And that's where I met my first sponsor. And I would tell her about the atrocities of what it was like to be in there cooking those people's eggs. And she would laugh at me. She was my sponsor for 14 years until I moved here. And then I got another sponsor when I first came here. And we parted ways because I didn't like her. She didn't like me either. But after that, I got another sponsor, and she's been my sponsor until today, as of last I've checked. When I was in that drop-in center, if you will, my boss came in that I had worked for up until that day of the car accident, and he said, "What are you doing in here?" And I said, "I belong here. I need to be here." And he asked me if I would come back to work, which I accepted. And I accepted to go back to work for him, which I did. And I worked for them under certain circumstances for the next 7 years. I had worked for them drunk for 7 years, and I worked for them sober for 7 years. It was sort of like, well, there's a story in the Bible about somebody who wanted to marry somebody. And he had to work. He got tricked into marrying the wrong one, so he had to work for the right one for 7 years. Dang, that's rough. And so that's what he did, but that's what I did. I worked for him in a sense of a living amends for 7 years. I lived worked for him sober for 7 years. So I felt like I had paid my dues with them, and then at some point I had learned enough in sobriety that I was not what I did. That's not who I was. And so I was able to walk away from that as far as my ego was concerned, because I had a big ego over what I did. So I was able to walk away from that. And I decided to go out into the world and accumulated the next 5 years of really, really crummy jobs. And the last one was the job where I met my husband. And after 3.5 years, we got married and we came to Virginia. So that's a lot of years, you know, and a lot of stuff all wrapped up in just a few things. But it was all always with the intention of me living in the solution. Because no matter what events transpired to get me here, none of it was any good if I wasn't going to live in the solution. The solution was for me to not take a drink, of course. That sounds kind of cheesy, but in here, it's the bedrock, of course. The bedrock of not taking a drink for an alcoholic is like huge. To not take a drink one day at a time in those early days was a struggle. You know, one day at a time, that 24-hour box was the lifeblood. I remember for the first couple of years, you know, I lived at my mother's house and she never believed me for the first 2 years that I was going to come right back after the meeting. You know, that look in people's eyes, you know, after you've ruined your relationships with people, you have to earn that back. Or I did. And I did. Because I lived in the solution of I can't, they can, and I think I'll follow them. And that's how I did it. I never really knew I was an alcoholic. I've learned a lot of things since then about Scots-Irish DNA, irrelevant, totally irrelevant. The fact was, once I took a drink, it set up the compulsion, and that was that. That's all there was to it, no matter what heritage I came from. You know, some of my family drank and some didn't. So because that's the way it started for me, and because that's how I've lived. I don't have any special magic, that's for sure. I wish that there were a lot of people that I could have done something for to make a difference. There's a woman right now who's been through like 8 treatment centers and has been through so much in her life, and she's laying drunk right now in her house at the bottom of the stairs. And she doesn't have a problem. You know, it's just tragic. It's absolutely tragic. And she's been taken out of her home and evaluated by the police and by the agencies that do those things. And the minute they take her, she sharpens up like a tack and she can answer all their questions and they can't hold her. It's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. So perhaps one day we'll go in there and see her, and that'll be that. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. But irrelevant again, you know. So what's next, you know? To be of service. Every day that's something that I ask God to allow me to be. But also, you know, Shakespeare, this is not in the book, To Thine Own Self Be True. That's a Shakespeare thing. I don't know why we all us AA say that all the time. It's not in our literature, really. But in a way, you know, you can't give away something you don't have. So you have to be careful that you're taking care of yourself, you know, eat right, sleep right, take care of yourself. But there's really no mystery in it. But the foundation of there is a solution, of course, is to not take help, but to accept the help that is certainly, you know, there is one who has all power. There is only one. And how that plays out in my life is sometimes a prayer can be an absolute fit. And, God, the fist, that frustration. And other times it's on my knees in a more reverent way, in more gratitude and more of everything that would seem more appropriate. And I was thinking on the way out here today, I live in the mountains, and driving out here, of course, the scenery is spectacular. And I was thinking, I wish that I could be just so grateful for so every moment. And yet I get caught up and self-centered, and I don't know. There's just no way I can stay in that state all the time. So, things get hard. You get hot, you get tired, you get sweaty, you get mad. I don't, do you get mad? We have a guy come out from California, and when he came out to do added value things as far as enriching soils and things like that on our farm, and adding just sort of things that would enrich the grasses and things like that. But when he came out here, he was behind in his child support. He was behind in his bills. He was behind in everything. And he didn't like to work all the time because, wow, man. And I'm thinking, you're an idiot. I don't need your help, But as time went on, sometimes people just need a little help. And so we're reaching out to him a little bit, and I know another guy who helps put people to work that are coming out of the jail programs. And you just look at these guys and you think, are you some kind of an idiot? Why do you put these tattoos all over your face? It scares people. Who wants you to work for you? Who wants you to work for them? Now, this is my prejudice coming out, people, but the more you're around some of these guys, it breaks your heart. It breaks your heart that they've set themselves up for such hardship in life. And I don't know what the answer is. You want to be of service, and it doesn't have to make you comfortable to be so at all. So, the walk with God, the walk with people, I don't really have the answers, but I can tell you this. When I watch moonshiners, we were just sharing this a little bit. I told this gal right here, I said, you kind of look like that girl that works on moonshiners. And she says, really? I don't really watch it. She goes, I don't know about watching it because they drink, don't they? And I go, yeah, but not like we do. Not like us. They just like taste it. And all it needs a little of this, a little of that. I said, no, that'd be good enough for me. That'd be good enough right there. And I just, some things are just not meant for me. They're just not meant for me. And I know one thing, that in life, I've found out that I can have anything I want. But I just can't have everything. I just can't have everything. I can't have it all. So, I know when I was reading today, I had a lot of interruptions on the farm. And there's a woman that called me about a year ago, and she said, I just need 30 days. I have 24 ponies. I need 30 days on your property in this field. Oh, and by the way, and I need to live there too. I just need 30 days. And so we were looking, and we said, well, okay, I think we can do that. And so we put her ponies up for 30 days, and we put her up for 30 days. I still have her ponies. And she's been evicted off of three other properties since we told her she had to go. And we're in the courts now over it. And all because, we're willing to try to help. And I've never been in a situation like this before. And so, it doesn't discourage me. I've also gotten a lot of joy every day. I go out there and I look at these little things and I think how cute they are because their ears are about this big and my mule's ears are about that big. And they're so neat to look at. And so I take care of them. And I don't know when it's going to end and how it's going to end, but I just keep trudging. I just keep putting the next foot in front of it myself, and I know there'll be an end, and somehow it'll end up the way it's supposed to end up. And I've never been in a position where I could help somebody like that before, but we don't see what's coming. Some people would have said, "Oh no, don't do that," and I had some people look up this person on the internet, and she's got a mile long list of judgments against her and all that. And they tried to tell me, "Don't do this." And I said, "I don't want to hear it. I've already accepted her, and I'm going to do it." And one thing for sure, I have not had to take a drink over and nor will I. I'm just going to reach out the best I can. And you could find yourself in places like that in your life. If you're able to help, you can. You can, start it when you want, end it when you want. We don't know what's in front of us, somebody said, somebody likes to talk up here for 20 minutes and then it could be over. And I go, "Oh, that'll never happen to me." As far as what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, my life's pretty peaceful now. I don't have that turmoil and that upset that I had when I was young, when I was new. There's a lot of, there's, I'll be 74 years old next time. I was 35 years old when I came into this program. Last year I had a stroke. And then I went into the hospital, had a great overnight stay. It was like, wow, even the hospital food was good. They couldn't find anything wrong with me. They said, "You have no evidence of a stroke. There's nothing wrong with you. You didn't have a stroke. You didn't have anything." And who knows? Life is very uncertain. It could be, who knows? I don't know what it is. But all my life, I've had absolutely exquisite health. So when the day comes, it comes, whatever that is. And you just keep suiting up and showing up and doing the do. And pretty blessed to have it as good as it is right now. So I don't really know. I'm kind of just kind of bottoming out for sure. So, rather than to drag you through any sort of other war stories, I think I'm really done. Thank you for that.